House Bill 1114, an act to revise certain voting and participation requirements related to bond issues involving two or more political subdivisions.
House Bill 1114, having had its second reading, so for final consideration, are there any remarks?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Michaels.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I know we're going to have a great debate about this issue, and I would like to give some background to it and texture as to why I brought it and why I think that it is a good thing for South Dakota. If you look at the bill as presented, it hasn't been amended in committee, but I will tell you the Committee on Local Government worked very hard on this. And to be candid, so you don't have to look in the journals, it was deferred to the 41st day. The committee, through its wisdom, went through reconsideration process and voted it down here on a 7-6 vote. A very, very deliberative process, and I think that's what we will go through here. But for our benefit, I'd like to give you the history of the bill and the subject matter. The law as it stood in 1947 was to encourage people to cooperate and entities to cooperate in the construction of schools. In 1984, that law was amended, and it was amended to change a long-standing responsibility that we have to taxpayers to make sure that no bond issue goes on the tax rolls of the landowners, all landowners, unless you get 60% of the vote approving that, involving schools. And let me tell you right out of the gate, I support that. And the reason I support 60% in general is for the history. In the area I come from, we have a great deal of history because we had a number of people who moved through the Yankton territory and the Yankton community on its way to settling Dakota. And what would happen and why our forefathers and mothers were so wise is that people would vote and they would leave the land and leave the landowners subject to an oppressive tax for the construction of buildings and then not have children present to be schooled or at least to take on that burden for a long period of time. At that point in time, it was 10 years, and now we can go out to 25 and even more, but generally they're in the 20 range. In 1984, and I would submit to you, I don't see there's a whole lot that has changed, but in 1984, the law was amended to allow facility joint ventures, if you will. And that is to allow schools and other entities to build buildings together. And if they did that, then the vote requirement was a simple majority, 51%. We have, as I'm fond of saying, from our community, no dog in the fight because we got in under the old law before it was repealed in 1999. In Yankton, we have a facility that was built due to the foresight of a number of people, one person sitting right here as one of our colleagues, another person sitting up in the balcony, to put together a joint facility involving both the high school, the school district, as well as the city, and it's a 40-60 share. In other words, 40% is supported by general obligation bonds of the city, paid for by sales tax, and the other 60% is by real property taxes. That did pass after two shots at it, but before that occurred, there was a great discussion. And any of you who have dealt based on other experiences in city councils or other organizations know how difficult joint power agreements are. And I would submit to you, even in our community, they still bring up many issues, cooperative and very, very productive discussions. In 1999, on this floor, Representative Steve Cutler, whom I admire a great deal, brought in a repeal. And he did because, in his estimation, and the legislature at that point in time, made the decision, and I would submit to you, correctly so from their perspective and our perspective, that at that point in time, there had been some school districts that were trying to game it, get away from the 60% requirement by having a city join in for a small amount or a small percentage of the whole bond issue. Well, to cut to the quick, that bill did pass. And I thought about this the last couple of years and said, I think that that's a fair comment. And I reflect on what is happening in South Dakota relative to population. And therefore, in House Bill 1114, I put in a requirement for your consideration that the other entity that would participate would have to have at least a 20% participation and relieve that tax burden for the purposes of a vote. to have that relieved off the landowners, but paid for, at least 20% of that project paid for by another source other than property taxes. I view it, in a sense, a real property tax issue. I also would submit to all of us that these are issues that are bigger than a building. These are issues that are actually bigger than us. We're asked to come up here and have the wisdom of Solomon to pass laws that will go on to the future for 50 years, for 100 years. It amazes me every day I walk in here and there's a shock that goes up in my spine thinking it's incredible that I can even be here, but there were people ahead of us that thought, what can we do to cooperate? Amendment B passed. We're going to consider a bill tomorrow about how we can encourage people to initiate measures to bring governmental entities together. Well, remember the oft-quoted seminar we attended with Dr. Satterley. He describes neighborhoods. Well, whatever they might be, the neighborhood in Faith is different than the neighborhood in Avon. The neighborhood up in Carthage is different than the neighborhood in Pine Ridge. But if we do live true to the mantra of local control, you have a vote. You have a discussion in both jurisdictions of whether or not these parties should come together. And if we're going to have a grade school in the northeastern quadrant of Dr. Satterley's neighborhood, and if we're going to have a clinic or a library in the southwestern with a high school, it makes eminent sense from my point of view that the people of that jurisdiction, of the school districts, the schools, excuse me, the cities, counties, whatever subdivision of government, would be able to cooperate. And this is indeed an incentive. I am extremely sensitive to the fact that this is an issue that can resonate because of trying to avoid putting more burden on a real property taxpayer. I pay real property taxes. I have a number of friends, clients, people and family that pay real property taxes, and we're sensitive to that. Thank you, Representative Canole. I'm almost done. And I think that it's important to remember, as people have seen in our jurisdictions and down in our area, it is amazing how many people come to our community, and thankfully for the people who had the foresight. It wasn't one election, it was two elections, and the second election went to the courts. But finally it was built. And as I'm fond of saying, there are three stages of construction. Stage one is there's no way that can be done. Stage two is this is way too expensive. And stage three is, wasn't that a great idea? I would urge you to support this great idea.
Further remarks, Representative Lentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to this bill. Being in the agriculture community, we found when we talked about this before with the 60% was put in because we felt as a body in the legislature, when we talk about a spending bill, it can't pass without two-thirds. And yet we're looking down on the lower level in the communities throughout the state and telling them that 50% is all right if we're going to spend your money. And that basically, I think, is the main argument. Are we going to tell the people in our communities it's all right to spend taxpayers' money with a 50%, and then in this body we tell them that it has to be a two-thirds? Thank you.
Further remarks, Representative Jaspers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and ladies and gentlemen of the House. Well, I too would rise in opposition to this bill, and Representative Michaels, the sponsor of the bill, pointed out that former majority leader of this body, Steve Cutler, used to speak against, or if he could be here today, he would be speaking out, I believe, in listening to his arguments over the past 4 years. And his point is this, if I can relay it to you. The reason why we had 60% in school bond election issues is the fact that we realize that not all property tax owners are relative. And what I mean that, for each person that gets the vote, they don't all own the same relative amount of property tax, which would go into funding the bond issue. In municipal type elections, it's just the people within the city limits. That's why we have the 50%, because there everyone is somewhat relative. Take that from back in the days when we put these into effect up until today, where in the rural areas of the state where you used to have maybe 10 farmers or 10 farming families, husband-wife families, now you maybe only have one. So that has really gotten to be more of an issue in the rural areas of the state in these elections than it ever used to be. And the fear is, when combining the elections, why it went to 60% a few years ago is the fact that an election may not have passed by 60%, but may have passed by 50%, somewhere in between there. So the drafters of the bond issue would go back and reorganize the bond issue, include a portion, and here it suggested up to 20% of that issue, and then go back and see if you can get the same 55%, which would have guaranteed your passage of it the first time around. For an example, if you had a $10 million project the first time, now you go back and include up to 20% or $2 million of that, I like round numbers, in another form of the government's involvement, now you're voting on an $8 million instead of a $10 million project. And my question would be, for those that are impacted on a larger perspective compared to their vote, a larger portion of their property taxes, would $8 million be that much better than $10 million? That's really what the question comes down to when we combine these. I would contend to someone that was maybe in disagreement with it then, might still be in disagreement with it if it was an 80% of that original project as was 100%. So this is this was put in place in respect of protection for those people who own a large amount of property and only get one vote. Former Representative Cutler used to use his small community of Claremont as an example, where he or one of his neighbors might own great tracts of land and thus have a large amount of property to be taxed, but someone who maybe has school children, lives in the town of Claremont, maybe owns a $2,000 house and still gets the same amount of vote. So I would contend that this was put in place for protection of all individuals across South Dakota. And as Representative Linz pointed out, we require 67% here. Thank you.
Representative Richard Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I have a question for the sponsor, and then also I'd like to make a comment, please.
State your question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The question I have for Representative Michaels is, did I hear you correctly that when you have a unique combined situation like this, such as your example in Yankton, the city brings to this mix the opportunity to use sales tax revenues as a way to pay off bonds instead of our traditional just property tax. Is that what I heard you say?
Representative Michaels.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for that excellent question. The answer is yes. In addition to that, a sales tax paying for 40% of it, there are additional fees that people who are using certain elements have to pay. If my son wants to use the pool or we're a member, he has to do that. But in addition to that, there are also a number of people that have made many contributions, like the former Yankton College has made contributions, and other people who have given gifts that also defer those costs. So it's in addition to those revenue sources.
Representative Brown, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I speak to the bill then, Mr. Speaker?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I did not support this bill that took the opportunity to have this 50% vote out of the law last year. I'm glad and I applaud Representative Michaels for bringing it back to us this year. His response to my question is exactly the kind of incentive that we're going to need and should have available as we look into the 21st century and what we're doing with facilities at the local level, both from a school district point of view and local communities, could even be a county facility for that matter. But the fact of the matter is when we have communities involved, cities, we have another source of funding to pay off the debt of those bonds that we otherwise wouldn't have. Now, in the example of our previous majority leader Cutler, concerned about what would happen and we'd have to put the emphasis only on the landowners, whether they're small or large, the fact of the matter is this gives us opportunities to build partnerships, to build alliances and networking, to cooperation between levels of government and reduce the cost of the facility because of the nature of where we're getting the money to build the building. So, Mr. Speaker, I would urge the members of this body to support House Bill 1114.
Further remarks?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Holbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, since I came here, I've heard a lot of talk about consolidation. I've heard a lot of talk about cooperation. I hear people talking all the time that why don't these schools get together and do more consolidation, more cooperation? And now I'm going to talk to you about the fact that schools have tried in the past to do some consolidation and cooperation in the issues of taking care of some of their buildings. For example, a school in a city wants to get together and build one library. I think that's an excellent idea. Instead of both of them, as we have seen too many times in our towns, going out there and building their own facility, duplicating services. These two entities are willing to get together and do something for the betterment of their town and for their school. I'm here to tell you that if they wanted to do that, it's no easy measure. They have to enter into a joint powers resolution. There's a lot of work to this. And the people that are willing to do this go through and jump through the hoops in order to make something like this work. I'm going to take it from another angle. People keep standing up and telling you how this is a tax increase. You end up having a school wanting to put up a library. They convince the people to get 60% and they put up a library. The city comes out, and I'm going to make this point, and it's very important to this. The city comes out and votes for that issue, and they need a 50% vote. So when we sit here and talk about how everybody needs to go 60%, city can stand up and ask for this vote, and they need just 50% now. They put up a library. I'm here to tell you that's a tax increase. You've got two libraries when you could have gotten by for one. If the city gets involved, that's been brought out before, they can draw upon a lot more things than just property taxes. They can draw upon sales tax. So I'm here to tell you again, it's a possible tax decrease to the property owners. We hear too many times from the people that live in our agriculture communities about how when a building goes up, they pay the same percent as commercial property taxes on that building. If you can take away some of that burden from those agriculture taxpayers and put it on to sales tax, and I know the argument, you'll say, well, they pay sales taxes too. Yes, they do, and they're going to pay them anyways. They're going to be providing that money in those cities where they do their business. I see this as a tax savings in a lot of ways. I see it as cooperation. I see it as consolidation of services. I see it as good for the state of South Dakota. In committee, the Municipal League came in and they're for it. They liked it. The school boards came in, they're for it, and they liked it. And I hope you like it too. Please vote for this bill.
Further remarks? Speaker. Representative Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I wasn't going to speak on this until I found out that the cities will probably use sales tax to pay their share of the bond, which is probably going to be paid a lot by the rural areas that come to town to buy parts and spend money in the city. Because I would remind you that the half that the school pays, or the portion that the school pays, the bond will be a bond on all the landowners, not only the city, but the rural. So maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but it is quite a burden on some of the larger landowners if you have a bond, and it probably really is not aligned to look at a 60%. So you have a unanimous vote that you really want to do this before you do it.
Further remarks, Representative Duenwald.
Mr. Speaker and ladies and gentlemen, you know, we're hearing all kinds of good reasons why we should pass this bill and allow them to spend the money at 50%. But you know, I want to point out a couple of facts to you. In this body, if we make an appropriation that lasts for 1 year, it takes a two-thirds vote. A two-thirds is 67% vote. When we issue a bond issue, it goes for many years, depending on the length of the issue. It could be 20 years, 30 years. And we encumbered that property for a long, long time. And it was suggested that we can't game the system this way because there's 20%. But let me point out to you, in many cases, a school district and the other entity, be it the city, most likely, comprise basically the same people. And the same people are going to be paying that tax and going to be voting on it. And I would just caution you and ask you to think very clearly before we do this. We changed the law in 99 for a very good reason. I think we ought to keep it that way, and let's not put in this provision so we can truly game the system, and we need to protect the minority just a little bit. Let's defeat the bill.
Further remarks. Representative Hunstead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Honorable body. I'm proud to tell you that we just passed a bond in Aberdeen to build a new school, and we did it with 60%. And I know that there are a lot of folks back there who would not be happy with me saying that I don't think we should go to 50. I still believe 60 is a good number. I believe that because those folks came back three times, and they made a better school each time. And they eventually decided to put together a package that made 60% of the people happy. I think it's a good thing if we're going to be spending money that we're careful how we spend it, and that it takes just a little bit of effort to make sure we get it done right. I am here to tell you that I hope we all will vote this down and leave it at 60%.
Further remarks? Hearing none. The question before the House then is the final passage of House Bill 1114. Those in favor vote aye. Opposed nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine and members proceed to vote on 1114.
Representatives Donovan, Don Hennies, and Bradford. All members present have voted.
Clerk will display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 40, nays 30.
House Bill 1114, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Questions on the title? Hearing none, the title is deemed correct.